Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I am culture editor at The Bulwark. And I'm very pleased to be rejoined today by Bobby Miller. We had Bobby on about a year ago now to talk about the Blu-ray release of his film, The Cleanse. And he has a novel that is out now. It's out this week. I am getting my final copy. I read an earlier draft, but I'm getting my final copy in the mail on Monday because I, Bobby, am a patron of the arts. I buy my books. I don't have them sent to me by the author. Thank you for being back on the show today, Bobby.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about Situation Nowhere, which is the name of the book. You can again just Google Bobby Miller Situation Nowhere. What's the website people can go to find it?
Situationnowhere.com.
Perfect. Tell folks, give people the elevator pitch for Situation Nowhere.
Sure. So it's about this super addictive energy drink that is causing people to explode. And half the country seems to be in denial of this or doesn't seem to care. That's kind of the broad strokes of it. In particular, it's about the CEO who runs this company who gets canceled for mysterious reasons. We're not sure why. And the company kind of freaks out because they're about to launch this new version of their energy drink. And they're looking for someone who has no social media history. And they find it in this barista. And she's very excited to be CEO and make lots of money. And then she slowly finds out that this new version of the drink is causing people to explode. So she's in a bit of a moral quandary, if you will, if she should stay as the CEO or, you know, do something about it.
Yeah. And there are lots of different, strands of kind of modern current behavior that are wound up into this. One is the whole cancel culture stuff, which, you know, we can talk a little bit about. But then there's also just the idea of a culture that has kind of stagnated a society that has devolved into one that is purely reactive. People spend all of their time on live streams. In this book, the major Hollywood studios have devolved into total AI slop factories. It's a book that's at least part about, I don't know, again, reaction, recursiveness, the idea of a culture that is kind of eating itself.
Yeah. And when I wrote it, I thought this was speculative. You know, I think it's coming quicker and quicker. There's like a chapter in there where it's like basically shareholders are texting what they think, you know, the next movie should be. And the AI just kind of figures it out and uses, you know, that's what was so funny is like Robert Downey Jr. coming back to the Marvel Universe. Like I wrote in the thing that like, you know, he dies and the estate is like, we need to bring him back. And that his movies post death are super, super popular. And Iron Man just keeps going to, I think it goes to like 241 in the book. And it's just weird because every time I read the news, it feels like we're getting closer to there.
I mean, it's just very funny. I was going through the manuscript of the earlier draft. I wanted to make sure this was still in it, that it didn't get taken out because it was, it now is almost old news. Like it, but this, yeah. I want to assure readers that Bobby was ahead of the curve on this one, but there's this very funny passage where, again, the concept here is, that, you know, of course, Robert Downey Jr. leaves the Marvel Universe. Iron Man dies in Avengers Endgame, right? And he wants to go off and do his own thing, right? This is from the book. When Downey was alive, he famously killed his Iron Man persona to rid himself of the cinematic universe Marvel created. He wanted to return to more varied artistic output and contribute to culture in a way that wasn't just superhero movies. However, after a while, he realized pop culture didn't exist anymore. It was only Marvel culture, and he wanted back in. Now, look, again, this is like, this is literally what has happened. This is literally what happened, you know, earlier, I guess last year, late last year, when Marvel announced that Robert Downey Jr. was coming back to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and he was going to be Dr. Doom this time. And everyone, I don't know, man. The reaction to that was a combination of what? And yeah, let's do it. And I'm not sure which is worse.
Well, I just thought about this today of, he won the Oscar, right? For Oppenheimer, right? Yeah. I'm wondering if he didn't win the Oscar. Like, did we sabotage? Like, if he didn't get the Oscar so quickly, maybe he wouldn't have come back to Marvel. But, you know, it's also this thing where I also write in the book about me just being sad about seeing young kids with, you know, Jurassic World t-shirts on and stuff like that. Cause I'm just like sad for the younger generation that we're not giving them anything new, that it's just kind of regurgitated stuff from our nostalgia. And that to me is like, the book is very silly and very absurd, but I think like for me, like what is pinning underneath of it is just a pure sadness for what's going on. Because, you know, and it's funny. Did you watch The Studio yet? The pilot?
No, not on yet. Apple TV? Not yet. The new Apple show. Yeah.
So I thought it was great. And one of the reasons I thought it was great is because the executives are actually, you have empathy for them, because I was going on general meetings and talking with execs, and they just looked so sad because they knew what, they didn't want to be making this stuff either. They didn't want to be doing spinoffs of all this IP. And so I kind of felt, you know, it's not, you know, typically the Hollywood narrative is like, it's creatives versus execs. But like the people that I was meeting were like, man, they didn't want to do that. They didn't want to, like there's spoiler alerts for the, but there's a Kool-Aid movie in the studio. And, you know, that's the type of stuff I was getting, you know, I was getting sent. Like, would you, I forget what board game it was. Like, would you read, you know, the script for whatever board game it was? This was like in 2019. And so that definitely, you know, it's just, it's unsettling for me as someone who, you know, dreamed, you know, moved to Los Angeles with all these aspirations, and then to see it take this turn. And then AI swooping in at this exact moment is really dark to me.
Yeah, no, and this is just a couple paragraphs later, we learn that the movies are now written entirely by AI. You know, they're just again recursively doing their thing. And I do wonder, you know, there's a big debate at the moment about the extent to which AI should be used, and you know, what, who should get credit for that, and how do you, you know, avoid replacing people. But like, set aside the labor question, and just the pure sadness of a world in which everything is kind of derived from this mechanical regurgitation of everything that has come before it is vaguely crippling to me. I don't mm-hmm. know how to deal with it. I don't know how to deal with it in a real way, aside from just like shaking my finger and being like, I am yelling at the clouds and saying this is bad.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny because if you look on social media and there's people post about something and they're like, well, whatever, you know, Hollywood's making such crap anyway, like AI's, what's the difference? And I actually, you know, I was annoyed by that comment, but now as I think about it, I'm like, that's actually, this is where we kind of have to stand our ground and like prove that we actually have something better to say and make right now, that we are better than AI, because they're not wrong. You know, stuff just feels like it's made by committee right now. and focus grouped and blah, 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 to the point of there being no voice. And I've had friends who have gone through the franchise machine and just kind of different people afterwards. And so, what are we doing? What are we doing, Sonny?
I don't know if it's
Stockholm syndrome or what, but I'm like, yeah, you guys have a point now about this AI. Like, if this is what we're saying pop culture in America is, then maybe AI is better, or maybe you should just give it to AI, because who cares? You know, like, there's a sort of, but for me, it really does boil down to the fact that all this tech is just ripping off people. I mean, it's just stolen data. It's stolen copywritten stuff. That's my main issue. And I don't think we wouldn't be here if that wasn't the mantra, just breaking stuff and stealing it, you know?
No, it's a pickle. So let's, the issue, you know, I want to touch on the timeliness of it, because this has to be, like, at the very least, mildly frustrating, because it takes a while to get a book written, to get it published, et cetera, et cetera. Like I said, I read this last year. Was there any concern that, we've kind of moved on from the whole, cancel culture, debate, argument? Like, a big part of this movie is about, to explain, in the opening chapters, the main character gets X'd. He gets officially taken by the government and kind of removed to a black site. Strong Brazil overtones here, if anybody has seen Brazil, it feels like a reference point. But it does feel like, it does feel a little bit like now all the discussion about cancel culture is like, oh God, we're done with that. Well, let's move on. And that frustrates me a little bit as somebody who saw a lot of these things go down and were never really reckoned with in any real way.
Yeah, no, I think I definitely downplay that element of the book when I talk about it, but because it really becomes kind of a launching point for all these other things. But for me, I was really and everyone's like, well, James, it worked out for James Gunn after all. Is always a thing. But at the time when he got fired, I was really upset by that. And everyone was quiet. I mean, no one spoke out about that. And I was like, this guy made so much money, and you could say helped Marvel figure out the tone of what they become so popular for them. And he's a filmmaker who I love. I watched Slither in theaters. So he was like my guy who got in and like somehow maintained his voice. And I was like, this is great. So I really was bothered by that. And, I think, and then, when obviously all this sort of stuff comes out, there was definitely a couple years where everyone in Los Angeles is like speaking in hushed tones. It's very a weird time. And I thought it was pretty funny, because my initial idea was, what if all these canceled people had were such social pariahs that they lived in the sewers like mole people? And so that's part of the book, is these people who get canceled form this fringe group and they live underground. And, there's people that probably deserve to be living underground, and then there's people who don't. And I think that exploring that in a very comic way was definitely the first thing that kind of got me going on the book, was that image of people living in the sewers. I don't know why that's funny to me.
I think people living in the sewers is just a funny image. I mean, that's, being forced to live underground, literally, the literal underground.
Yes.
Literalizing is always funny. Again, one of the touchstones for me on this book was Brazil. I think I said this to you. It's like Idiocracy by the way of Brazil, which if folks haven't seen the movie Brazil, you should. It's very good. Terry Gilliam, 1980s kind of weird authoritarian chic movie, very, very continues to be chilling for a variety of reasons. But the the other reference, of course, is Idiocracy. And that's because this does feel like a society that has kind of collapsed in on itself and is and has resorted, has fallen into absurdity in a very real way.
Yeah. Both of those movies hold up. And I would say Idiocracy feels maybe more of the jokes in the book, in terms of just, you know, there's, listen, Sonny, this book has something for everybody. There's potty humor. There's real stuff. I'm trying to talk about real stuff, but yeah. You know, I think both of those movies, but in particular Brazil, I think is a masterpiece and just kind of tonally peerless, you know, in terms of it being funny but dark. It feels very much like a portal into a very defined world. And I, you know, I saw that recently at Vidiot's in Los Angeles, and I'll have you know, there was a bunch of young people who had never seen it before, and I was like, that's fantastic, sold out crowd. But what I was really, and it never really took effect on me, but the casualness of these terrorist bombings and throughout the movie didn't really hit me until I saw it on the big screen recently, of just like, there's a bombing that goes off and people just pick up their conversations and continue talking as if, and there's people bleeding behind, you know, it's yeah, an amazing film, but that's that level of brutalness in the satire, I don't think I really took in until recently.
Yeah, and again, I don't want to keep harping on this, but there's a moment in the opening chapter where the government forces kind of break into a bar and blow up the walls just so they can grab this guy and take him out, which again feels very much like that restaurant scene in Brazil. That's literally the thing that came to mind 100%. When I was reading it, was like, oh, this is that. What are some of the other influences for you? So we've got Brazil, we got Idiocracy, the general state of the superhero thing. What else were you thinking of when you were writing this?
You know, I have, obviously I'm a filmmaker, so a lot of my touchstones are movies, but another one was Larry Cohen's The Stuff. Have you seen that movie?
I've not.
It's very goopy, but it's about this, like, I think it's like a yogurt that everyone's really addicted to. You know, very satirical about, you know, American consumerism. I think book wise, Cat's Cradle, the Kurt Vonnegut book, was definitely on my mind. You know, I read stuff that don't really pertain to this, but like, you know, Bret Easton Ellis, I'm a fan of, and anything that's a little darker. Larry Cohen's The Stuff was definitely on my mind because I think, like, it's just the goopiness, I would say, of the stuff, because Brazil and Idiocracy, they don't have the goop, you know what I mean? Sonny, I had to bring some goop into this.
Explain the goop. Explain the goop to people, because we're talking about the goop. We're talking about the exploding people.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, so people, you know, drink this energy drink, and at certain points they explode. And when they explode, it's just green goop. They're just explosions of green goop. To the point where it kind of becomes like fireworks. I think at one point I describe it as, it's like fireworks going off. It's so rampant at a certain point in the book. I don't know. I always seem to put goop in whatever I do. So it's very on brand coming from the cleanse.
Are you, I assume that you have the idea of a, you know, movie you could turn this into? Is this, are you shopping this around to the goopier studios? You know, you got Trauma on the line,
Well, it's funny because when I, you know, I have no context to the publishing industry. I'm, you know, going in at zero, but I had asked a bunch of producers, like, do you know any book agents? And, but they were like, no, but we know this film TV rights agent. So I do have someone, this guy, Sean Berard at, I think it's called Untitled now. It used to be Grandview, but he's actually, he was the first person to read it and kind of flip for it. And so he's out there doing the Lord's work, shopping this book around. But I, you know, for me, it was like, I just wanted the book to exist. So when we had that first phone call, I was just like, by the way, I'm not going to wait around to like a big five publisher to, you know, I don't want to play that game where I'm waiting a year to get someone to read. Like, I will go to a small press to put this out because I think it's really potent and needs to exist. And he was down for it. He was really cool. So, I haven't, you know, I think if anything were to happen with this, I would, if I were involved in the writing, I would literally just treat it as source material, like a piece of IP, and pretend I didn't write it and try to do something different with it, because I'm not exactly interested in doing something that's faithful to my own book. If that sounds mm-hmm. weird, but you know, I think like a lot of times when an adaptation is too faithful, it doesn't work and it doesn't consider that it's two different mediums. So I would treat my own material like trash, quite frankly.
All right. So let's put your book through the studio destruction machine. And you are you're giving it, you're like, hey, you gotta turn this into a movie. What's a thing you would jettison from the book that you love in the book? You got, all right, I gotta get rid of this.
Huh. Jeez.
Let me put you on the spot here.
Jeez, yeah, you're putting me on the spot here. What would I jettison? I don't know. I see opportunities for expansion. Like, to me, it's like, are you watch The Boys at all?
Sure.
Like, I feel like there's room to expand some of this superhero culture stuff in a way. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's anything. Can I get back to you on that one?
No. All right. What would you expand? Because I feel like that's another way to go with it. If you don't, all right. So there are two ways to go with any source material, right? You can turn it into a series or you can turn it into a movie. And if you're turning it into a movie, you're probably cutting. If you're turning it into a series, you're probably expanding.
Right. To me, it feels like it's a series because there's just too much stuff to talk about. And also, I don't think people make movies like this. I just don't think they do, if I'm just being honest. But they do would be, you know, I could see like a limited series or something like that. So for me, it would be like, I would want to spend more time underground with the, they're called the Brotherhood of the Resigned, the canceled people, and really get into their stories, and explore that. And then I think there's an opportunity for, because also I and I don't know if it was in the version you read, but I make like a glancing reference to, I'm going to get into trouble for this, but like Marvel fanboys have turned into like a domestic terrorist group.
Yeah.
Because so, you know, like I think there's just plenty of room to expand that stuff. But I think, that just feeling like we're at the end of pop culture, I think would be the overarching theme with a lot of that stuff.
Yes. I think I often, what's the Tony Soprano line? You know, I feel like I got in at the end of things. That does feel true a lot of the time. I do want to talk about one thing. You mentioned the terrorist fanboys, and we've talked a little bit about the folks who are like, well, whatever, it's AI slop anyway. Or it's franchise slop anyway, who cares? I do think we have to discuss the consumer portion of this. The user is not excluded from culpability, right? And there was there was an interesting story at futurism.com. My colleague Hannah Yost sent this over across in the Slack this week. But basically, the long and the short of it, it was a write-up of a study that noted ChatGPT power users, you know, the people who use it all the time and are kind of becoming kind of dependent upon it are showing signs of addiction, right? They're showing say it's not just they're using it to punch up their charts and their reports or whatever, but it's also let me see if I can find the actual indicator. All right, here we go. In a new joint study, researchers with OpenAI and the MIT Media Lab found that the small subset of ChatGPT users who use it all the time engaged in more problematic use, defined in the paper as, quote, indicators of addiction, including preoccupation, withdrawal symptoms, loss of control, and mood modification, end quote. And look, I will put this out there. I'm against addiction. I'm against addiction in all of its forms, but particularly with this fucking AI robot that is living in people's heads and telling them what to think and how to type. Like, I feel like that's very bad. I feel like that's very bad. And that is at the very least kind of an undercurrent of your book in this kind of dystopian future you imagine.
Yeah. I mean, what is that going to do to online dating? You know, what is this going to do? We're like trying to talk to someone. And, you know, I could imagine that you could just have, you know, you could just be firing off at multiple people and tailoring things. You know, the human implications are just so dark to me. But here's where I'm going to give you some optimism, because I do think that there's going to, yeah, look at that. I think there's a backlash coming, and I think there's a real strong tech minimalism thing that's happening. Like, I'm getting a Lite phone, the Lite phone 3 that's coming out, and there just seems to be, I think, a movement of people who want to reject the algorithm and reject this stuff. And I see it in young people. It's not just old farts, old millennials like me, you know. And I was at the Dodgers parade, and I see this kid. He's up on a pole, and he's filming, you know, shooting the parade. And I'm looking at this thing, and he's holding like an 8mm camera, like an old video camera that I used, you know, when I was 12. And I say something to the guy next to me, and they're like, "Oh man, that'd be funny if he runs out of tape." And literally 10 minutes later, he runs out of tape, and his buddy's handing him a tape to shoot this Dodgers parade. And I'm like, something is happening, because that's, you know, I don't know. I just feel like, and you see it, there's like a re-embrace of like early 90s still cameras, point and shoot cameras.
Sure.
I just think something is happening. I want to believe something is happening in terms of there being a backlash, at least with artists. And I hope for just people in general. And I think as, you know, more of this conversation around, you know, kids in schools with phones and stuff. Like, what about adults? Like, I have a problem with it. And so, you know, I think there's a bit of an acknowledgement. And my hope, my hope is that it's not a political issue, that it's just a human issue that we're talking about, and doesn't become partisan, because that would really stink. You know, I feel like it's getting there, but, you know, to me, this just seems fundamental.
No, I do think I'm totally with you on this should not be a partisan issue. This should be this should be a thing we are all concerned about. I am kind of fascinated by, because there is absolutely this, tech skeptical side of society. There are definitely people who are kind of moving away and trying to get away from some of that stuff. There are also people really leaning into it. And I could very easily imagine a sort of bifurcated future where you have like the people who are plugged in all the time and the people who aren't. And I don't know how those two societies interact with each other. I'm not like that. That is the sort of split that nobody really thinks about. You know, we think about partisan splits. We think about, civil strife, sectarian conflict, whatever. I just think about two different societies kind of living parallel to each other and what that means.
Yeah. No, it's the second book, I guess. I think like, yeah, I don't know. That's really where my 'cause I have a 4-year-old, and, if I spend time online, I get very dark and read about it. You know, every day there's some terrible headline about something, and I need to like come back home and, you know, create a world that I feel optimistic about for my son. And so I think that's really the new tension in me is like, how do we, you know, make this good for me? I'm trying to, like, with the book coming out, I really think being in person, I think in person's the new thing. It's, I think being in real life and talking to people, creating events, I think that's the new way. I think it has to be, especially coming off of the, you know, the pandemic and all that stuff. Because I just can't, I just think we're eating ourselves here with social media and, you know, you're not even following people you want anymore. I mean, it's like, it's whatever they want you to see. And, I'm kind of tired of it. I'm just exhausted by it and I want out. So,
well, speaking of, you have an event coming up here. What day is it?
This Saturday.
It's Saturday. Yes.
If it comes out later.
Saturday. Perfect. This will go up before your event. So you can tell people about that. Where is the, what is the event? Where is it? What are you going to be doing?
So it's part of, this AWP Writers Conference. And it's going to be in downtown LA at the Redwood. And it's at 6 p.m. I'm going to be reading with a bunch of other writers. And the cool thing is that I'm going to read the chapter you like, my secretly favorite chapter, against a rock band. So I'm going to have a musical backing for this chapter. And I think it's going to be really cathartic for everyone. So I'm really excited about that.
Excellent. Excellent. So again, the book is Situation Nowhere. You can find it at situationnowhere.com. The pre-sale sold out. You sold out the pre-sale. That's great.
Yeah.
Very exciting. People obviously excited for it. I am, again, still waiting on my copy. It'll be here shortly. So I am excited to get that and check out the version that you told me is 15% better than
it's,
the previous
version.
Yeah,
at least 15.
Okay.
Maybe even 17. Yeah,
that's you don't want to overpromise. You don't want, it's not 100%
right.
Better. It's like
right.
just enough to intrigue you, mm-hmm. which is smart. I always like to close these interviews by asking if there's anything I should have asked. If you think there's anything folks should know about your book, about society in general, what did we not discuss that we should
society
have?
Society in general. You know, there's one other theme of the book, and it's selling out, and like how. When I was a youngin in the 90s, like selling out was like bad. Like you, like with grunge and everything, it's like, you don't want to sell out. And I feel like now everything is like, well, you want to make the app so that Google can buy it and then turn it into garbage, but you'll make a lot of money. And I think that's just across everything. And I think we need to bring back that being a bad word. And it's something that's in the book that's kind of underneath some of the stuff. And I think once we label that as bad, and maybe we can kind of get back to making good stuff again.
Sellout shaming, very important.
Yes, sellout shaming. Yeah. Listen, you can make a living doing anything. It doesn't have to be your art. You know what I mean? That's what I'm after. Like, just do anything else to make a living and then make good art. I don't know.
Boy, that's a whole nother podcast.
That's a whole other thing.
Podcast. You start with a bowl of ice at 5:20 in the morning, and then you do your art, and then then you go to work. All right, Bobby, thank you for being on the show again. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
Again, the name of the book is Situation Nowhere. You can find it at situationnowhere.com. Check it out. I quite enjoyed it, and lots of other people apparently are as well. So I'm excited to recommend it. Check out and what? Where was the event again?
It's called the Redwood. It's called the Redwood. It's in downtown LA. It's March 29th, Saturday, 6 p.m.
Excellent. So if you're looking for a fun book to option for Apple TV Plus or Max or something, go go.
It will
listen
be
to
selling the book
it.
There, by the way. The book will be
and
on sale there.
You can
you
pick up a copy
it.
Of the book.
Yeah.
So it'd be great. All right, Bobby, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
My name again is Sonny Bunch. I am culture editor at The Bulwark, and I'll be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. We'll see you guys then.